Campus FM jippreżenta t-tieni taħdita minn serje ta' taħdidiet organizzati mid-Dipartiment tal-Malti fl-Università flimkien mal-Kunsill Nazzjonali tal-Isim Malti. It-taħdita tal-lum Towards an International Maltese Linguistics mill-Professur Thomas Stoltz.
Grazie ħafna. Il-bjerax zamtkom għal żewġ sigħat għaliex allura ġibt l-arloġġ filgħaxija. Towards an international Maltese linguistics, that's an introduction to the background on which the idea grew to found a society devoted to the study of Maltese linguistics, an international society, not a national one. As yesterday, there is a table of contents, and it's a very meager table of contents. There is the introduction. Then I give you some good reasons for a linguist to found a society. And then I have to counter some counter-arguments. And the conclusions are about the future, what will happen to the society, what will happen next autumn in Bremen. So let's have a look at what I claim. I claim that time is ripe for founding an international society which dedicates itself to the study and promotion of Maltese linguistics on a global scale. That's my idea. Now, a lot of people like to play the advocatus diaboli, and they might ask, why? Is it really necessary to have a society devoted to the study and promotion of Maltese linguistics, and is it feasible at all? Okay, there are some putative counter-arguments against the foundation of such a society, and I will review these counter-arguments without commenting upon them now. This will be done later during the talk. One of the counter-arguments I heard in Germany is Maltese is already taken care of in societies of Oriental studies. Why have a separate, a distinct society? Okay, this is number one. The next one, I heard this again in Germany. Maltese is too small a language to deserve a society of its own. It's just 400,000 speakers, or perhaps 500,000, but that's it. Meaning only major languages deserve societies of their own. So that's. Then another argument, well, are there enough topics to talk about? Maltese topics are too few to render a separate society necessary. We just need one meeting and then we are through with it. That's the idea behind it. Next one is, because Maltese has already been described exhaustively, there are no open questions anymore, because there's a grammar. Next one is, this is the economical kind of counter-argument. Malta is too small a country to afford the necessary manpower and funds for an international society. Another society and another society, and somebody has to pay for it. And is Malta economically strong enough to do that for so many societies? Then Malta already has Il Consil. So why have the society then? And last counter-argument, probably there are many more. The international community of addicts of Maltese is too small to require a society. There are just the people in Malta and perhaps one or two others outside Malta with a Maltese family background, and then that's it. That's, again, one of these arguments. And we will see that none of these arguments is really tenable, but at the time, for the time being, I let them at this. Now, before we look at the potential counter-arguments, we'll look at the reasons a linguist might have for founding a society of this kind. These are good reasons. For a general linguist, every language, no matter how small the speech community, the economical power and or its cultural achievements, is a highly valuable treasure which deserves to be studied thoroughly in order to help us understand how the most distinctive property of humans, that is language, is organized. General linguists want to know about human language. And in order to know everything about human language, we have to look at languages. We are not all of us are theoretical linguists. Some of us are empirical linguists and think that we learn about the nature of human language by looking at actual languages. And not just at a selected few of actual languages, but ideally at all languages. To come to grips with the intricate nature of human language, It is insufficient to glimpse occasionally at selected fragments of grammars, perhaps only of a certain number of major languages, such as English, for example, and then generalize over the entire population of languages. There is one language, we look at them. If we believe strongly in universal grammar and believe that universal grammar is very powerful and responsible for most of what we find in the realm of structural solutions in language, we might get the idea that one language is enough to look at, then we know everything about universal grammar. But perhaps we don't know everything about the margins of variability of language structure, and then this would be a topic of its own then. And it is an ethically well-founded task of the general linguist to see to it that as many languages as possible are adequately and exhaustively described. This goal can hardly be reached if those who occupy themselves with investigating a given language conduct their research in isolation from one another or each other and without direct contacts to the speech community. If there is one specialist of language A in Alaska, another one in New Zealand, and another one in South Africa, they hardly have a chance to get together, although there is email contact, I know that, but perhaps that's not enough to work efficiently on a common subject. Thus, it makes good sense to put linguistic research of individual languages on a solid basis by way of creating and institutionalizing an international network of researchers whose activities can be coordinated under the auspices of a society devoted to the linguistics of that particular language. This is the ideal for each and every language worldwide, and this ideal has become real for numerous languages already, not necessarily only major ones. There are some very small speech communities which have society backing them up. But there are still thousands of languages which lack any institutional background. Thus, Maltese deserves a society of its own just like any other language. Now we come to countering the counter-arguments. So if we accept that these arguments are valid arguments for a linguist, we still have to face the many potential counter-arguments in order to show that an international society of Maltese linguistics is necessary and feasible. So the first argument is the following. Maltese is already taken care of in societies of Oriental studies. Now, we all know there is this very peculiar aspect of the structure of Maltese, that it is somehow mixed Roman-Semitic. No matter how much and how we understand the term of mixture in this sense, there is a Romance component in Maltese and there's a Semitic component in Maltese. This mixedness has its implications. Modern Maltese is the product of centuries of intensive contact of an erstwhile purely Semitic language and its Romance neighbors. English influence is currently strong and may be responsible for ongoing changes in Maltese phonology, grammar, and lexicon. That's what's happening right now. Because of these mixtures, Maltese has become an interesting object for scholars without training in Oriental studies. There are many people who take an interest outside Malta, an interest in Maltese, who don't know about Arabic and Hebrew, the traditional languages in traditional Oriental philology. So they approach Maltese from a non-Oriental perspective. For example, specialists of Romance languages who want to study the Italian or Sicilian component in Maltese, students of English varieties worldwide. Is there a kind of Maltese-influenced English variety spoken on Malta, for example? Linguists interested in language contact phenomena in general and many others want to make Maltese the focus of their research without having to look at the language from the viewpoint of Oriental studies, because there is a kind of Canaan or canonical way to look at Neo-Arabic varieties in the perspective of Oriental studies. You have a certain way to approach a Neo-Arabic variety if you do it within the realm of Oriental studies. If you don't belong to Oriental studies or don't follow the unwritten rules of Oriental studies, you have more freedom to approach a language like Maltese, even other Neo-Arabic varieties, not only Maltese. Now, with a view to facilitating the cooperation of these many groups, Romance linguists, English linguists, other linguists interested in contact of languages of interested scholars, Maltese should be taken care of in a distinct society which is institutionally dissociated from Oriental studies. That doesn't mean that Orientalists are denied the right to study Maltese, that, to set things right. This is not a monopoly for the new society, the only society where it is allowed to study Maltese. That's not the idea behind the society. Everybody else who wants to do research on Maltese is allowed to do so, but the society to be would be independent of the traditions of certain philologies. So you don't have to follow the unwritten rules or traditions of a society if you want to study Maltese according to new approaches, new models, new theories, or whatever. So now, let's have a look at an interesting story, or three interesting stories. Maltese is too small a language to deserve a society of its own. This is perhaps one of the most often uttered counter-arguments against founding a society of the Maltese type. Let's have a look at what happened in three other cases, case studies. The first is the disintegration of Romance philology in Germany, something completely different in a way. You know that what is called Romanistik, that's a German invention of the 19th century, the kind of discipline that has been occupying itself for more than a century with the entire Romance phylum, all Romance languages, including their literatures and cultures, and sometimes even the national histories of these territories and languages. So you studied Romanistik, and this was the cover term for French, Italian, Catalan, Occitan, Romanian, Spanish, Portuguese, and so on. Everything that counted as a Romance language was part of Romanistik in Germany. This lasted until the early 1970s, and there was at that time, a politically very powerful organization called the Deutsche Romanistenverband, that's the Union of the German Romanicists, in a way, DRV, and this society was really politically powerful in Germany. They could ask for new professorships to be installed at universities, and there were about 1,000 members in this society, more than there are general linguists in Germany, for example. So the very, very, very powerful organization. However, this organization was traditionally dominated by French, because French was an obligatory subject matter at the gymnasium in Germany. So the second foreign language you took in the modern branch, in the modern language branch, English first, then French. So there were a lot of, hundreds of, thousands of French teachers were part of the DRV, and all decisions taken in the DRV were in favor of French. If they decided something, say a joint major project, there was French in focus. And all the other languages were minority languages in a way, even Spanish and Italian. So specialists of the other languages felt that this concentration or focus on French was an obstacle to the research and furthering of the course of the other languages, other Romance languages. So what happened? Because the representatives of French studies in Germany were always in the majority, there was no chance to have a democratic vote and win the vote. So the DRV subsequently split up into various sub-organizations, some of which became at least temporarily autonomous, with no official ties to the former all-embracing organization. This is a very interesting story because that goes on and on now. The history repeats itself, because what happened next, there was in the early 1980s, the Society for or of Ibero-Romance Philology was founded. So a society devoted to Spanish, Catalan, and Portuguese plus substandard, non-standard varieties of Spanish. It came into being early in the 1980s, and it was intended as the representative of the Romance languages spoken on the Iberian Peninsula. But then there are several languages, and the same problem as with French in the DRV happened here, because the Pan-Iberian character did not remain unchallenged for long, as the members of this new society felt the dominance of Spanish, previously the dominance of French, now the dominance of Spanish, to be detrimental to the other Ibero-Romance languages, and thus scholars of Catalan and Portuguese founded a common organization. And you know already what happened to that organization. There were specialists of Portuguese and Catalan, together forming the Lusitanist-Catalanist Union of Germany. This organization had a life cycle of 5 years, and then this society of Catalanists and Lusitanists itself did not meet the needs of its heterogeneous components and soon dissolved into a separate society devoted to Catalan, the German Catalanist Union, and another one specialized on Portuguese, the German Lusitanist Union. And nowadays there is a kind of emancipation movement, because representatives of Brazilian, American Portuguese feel that there is a dominance, an undeserved dominance of European Portuguese studies in this society, and they are making attempts to create at least something as a kind of sub-organization for Brazilianists. So there is perhaps a future Brazilianist Union of Germany. So that's another split-off of the Lusitanist group, which is a split-off of the Catalanist-Lusitanist group, which is a split-off of the Ibero-Romance group, which is a split-off of the former DRV. So hardly necessary to mention that there is a Society of Italian Studies too. And there is another one. The legal status is still unclear. I myself don't know whether it is a society on a par, on a legal par with the other societies, or whether it is just a kind of faction. That's devoted to Balkan Romance varieties, Romanian plus Romanian, Anglo-Romanian, Istro-Romanian, and perhaps, I don't know, I guess that this is a relatively fairly stable state, because there is perhaps no need for further developments to create new societies. This large dissolution of the erstwhile organization impelled then the specialists of French to follow the dissenters in founding their own splinter group exclusively devoted to French, because what was left of the DRV was entirely devoted to French, but there was no French in the label used for that organization, so they created a new organization. That is the Franco-Romanistenverband in Germany, so that's the French philology organization in Germany, and the DRV was only there as a kind of empty label. Now, this isn't the end of the story. In the aftermath of this process, which reflects the growing tendency of specialization of Romance philologists in Germany, the representatives of the various new organizations have come to an agreement which envisages the resurrection of the former DRV, though now as the union of semi-autonomous organizations based on individual Romance languages. Because what happened was that they lost political power. The smaller the societies got, the less power they had. The DRV was the one that had political power because it was the representative of thousands of people. Now the Lusitanist Union is the representative of 150 persons. So that's really little in comparison to the huge number of people the DRV represented. What we see here is that people feel the necessity to have something devoted entirely to their special field of interest. If I do Catalan studies, I want to do that without having to attend to all these talks about French and the other Romance languages. If I want to do studies devoted to Romanian, I don't want to have to pass through Portuguese, French, and Spanish and Italian. First, I want to direct my research, invest my energy in this special field. One of the developments in the last 30 years is that until the 1970s, you could expect of every German Romanicist to be able to speak and read French. But that has changed. There are a lot of Romanicists in Germany now who have hardly a competence, active or passive competence in French. So why should there be this French dominance in the DRV when there are enough people who don't know French, so don't care for French in a way? There are many more people who start their studies in Romance philology with one of the other Romance languages, especially Spanish. So this shows if we stick to the idea that Maltese belongs to Oriental studies, we have more or less the same problem. There are people who want to study Maltese without enough knowledge in the Arabic or Hebrew field needed for traditional Oriental studies. And the same development as in the German Romanistenverband is behind the idea to have something that is specialized, highly specialized to one language, where we can combine all the interests and energies of people who don't belong necessarily to the field of Oriental philologists. So this wholesale reorganization of the academic landscape within German Romance philology is indicative of the necessity to safeguard the needs and interests of the individual languages, which cannot be guaranteed in large organizations whose internal decision-taking procedure depends on the democratic principle of majority votes. That's the problem. It's democracy, but it's a democracy that creates minorities without rights, in a way, within the society. Because if the society has to decide on where to invest the money for projects, it goes with the majority. And if the majority is pro-French, the Catalans wouldn't get the money. If in the Oriental society people are for, say, East Arabic varieties, research on East Arabic varieties, no money would be invested in other varieties, for example, Maltese. And the same counts for other organizations of this kind. If the organizations are multilingual organizations and have this kind of democracy principle, according to majority vote, there's always this problem. Now, the second case, the Society of Pidgin and Creole Languages. Give you the details. I have to... Okay, I'm back. Yeah. So this is different from the first case. New academic disciplines have a hard time to develop if their domain calls for interdisciplinary cooperation and or deviates from the canon of topics of a traditional philology. If you want to do something new, you have the problem if there are traditions in your discipline. It's hard to fight these traditions. One example are Creole languages, Pidgin languages. Many linguists working in English departments, Dutch departments, Romance departments, French, Spanish, and so on, they study Pidgins and Creoles, English-based Creoles, Dutch-based Creoles, French-based Creoles, and so on. In their home institutions, Pidgins and Creoles do not belong to the received catalog of legitimate subject matters. It's still the same in Germany. You can't become a professor of Romance philology, for example, with just a habilitation, the second dissertation devoted to Creole, Creole varieties, French-based Creole varieties. It's hardly possible because that's not considered a traditional topic of Romance philology, although many people study Creole varieties, French-based, Spanish-based. The same applies to traditional English studies in Germany. And I'm pretty sure that you won't get one of the two professorships for Dutch philology in Germany if you have done your PhD on the second dissertation on Creole varieties of Dutch. That's a no-no. Since the 1960s, the number of people who devoted at least part of their time as a researcher to the study of Pidgin and Creole languages has increased rapidly and dramatically. We have thousands of people who take interest internationally on a global scale who are interested in Pidgin and Creole languages. And they all face the same problems. If they are part of the English department, they should better do something on Old English or modern English varieties of Britain or the United States than study English-based Creoles, for example. And in addition to this, these problems, Students of Pidgins and Creoles feel that it is inadequate to consider English-based, Dutch-based, French, Spanish, Portuguese-based Creoles varieties of their respective European lexifier languages. I talked about this yesterday. So a Portuguese-based Creole is not a variety of Portuguese. So it's something else, a different language that looks like Portuguese, superficially. The same applies to French, based, and so on. So it's not the proper place for studies of Portuguese Creoles to study them in a Portuguese department, or only in a Portuguese department, because these languages, these various Creoles, have so many things in common which can't be explained by one of the lexifier languages, so that they deserve a separate department, a Creole department. But as far as I know, there is worldwide no Creole department yet. At least there is none in Germany. To face the problems successfully posed by Pidgins and Creoles, the institutional cooperation of philologists with various backgrounds and specialists of African, Amerindian, Asian, and Oceanic languages and language contact researchers is required. That is something you don't find in a Romance philology department or in a German philology department, not normally. So you need the cooperation of certain specialists. This constellation of expertise cannot be achieved within the limits of a traditional philology. A new discipline has to be created, and since the discipline so far is without an acknowledged position on the university level, this can only be achieved via a society, which promotes the study of Pidgins and Creoles and creates the necessary public awareness. And as a matter of fact, there is a society for the study of Pidgin and Creole languages. It has been there for about 10, 15 years. It's very successful. It runs a journal. But still, there is not a single chair at a university in the Western world, as far as I know, whose description is Creole or Pidgin linguistics. Everybody involved in Creole or Pidgin linguistics does it on the side, in a way. As a member of the English department, a French department, sociolinguistics department, or whatever, but there is no special position devoted to Creole languages. Now the third case, this is Letzeburgisch. Letzeburgisch is the national language of the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg. It's co-official with German and French. It's the majority language there. It's spoken by 90% of the population. German and French are super straight languages in a way. Up until very recently, Letzeburgisch was considered a German dialect of the Mosel-Franconian branch. The sister dialects are spoken directly beyond the border on the German side, and people on both sides of the border speak, in fact, the same dialect. So linguistically speaking, it's a German dialect. Letzeburgisch was considered a dialect, and as such, the study of Letzeburgisch was part of German dialectology. But as there are so many German dialects, not much time was invested in the study of Letzeburgisch, because you have so many other dialects to occupy yourself with. Again, the democratic majority vote principle. Now, political awareness in the Grand Duchy has led to a political decision according to which Letzeburgisch, from overnight, in a way, has become the most recent Germanic language. So emphasis is on language, not on Germanic. That's uncontroversial. How do you call them in English? Letzeburgians? Luxembourgians. Luxembourgians. The Luxembourgians decided that Letzeburgisch is now a language. The political border that separates Luxembourg from Germany gave rise to the idea that a separate state, the Grand Duchy is a separate state, needs a separate language. If German is one of the two official languages of Luxembourg, why is it a separate state at all? Couldn't it just be part of Germany? It's a monarchy. That's impossible with a republic in Germany, so that's perhaps a problem. But to make it clear that Luxembourg is something different, not just another kind of Germany, incidentally outside the borders, Letzeburgisch was promoted from dialect status to language status because that's the symbolic effect of having a language of one's own. Now that Letzeburgisch has been raised to the status of language as opposed to the former dialect status, it is of course no longer opportune to leave the study of Letzeburgisch in the hands of German dialectologists. It is no longer a dialect. It's a language. And if it is a language of its own, it cannot be the subject matter of a society devoted to the dialects of another language. Therefore, language activists among the linguists of Letzeburgisch, all of them are trained in German philology and dialectology, are currently preparing the grounds for the creation of a society of Letzeburgian linguistics. The first steps have been taken last year. In 2006, there was the first conference devoted to Letzeburgian as a language. Meanwhile, a chair has been created at the new Université du Luxembourg. There's a chair for general linguistics, and that's the chair where Letzeburgian linguistics is conducted by the new chair there. So thus, an international society of Maltese linguistics is nothing strange, not even extraordinary. Its founding would be the most normal thing to do. We want to do Maltese studies, and we have the same problem like people who study Pidgin and Creole languages. There is no organization of this. There is, outside Malta, there is no chair for Maltese linguistics at the university, so there is no infrastructure for this. We have to create the infrastructure ourselves. None of the other huge organizations could invest energy and money and time into solely studying Maltese, because there are so many other subject matters to be taken care of. So we need a separate organization, just as people in Luxembourg think it opportune to have a separate society for their new language, just like students of Pidgin and Creole languages who don't find themselves represented by any academic institution. Parallel to the story I told you about the developments in the German Romance philology scene, there is this increased feeling that we have to specialize something that is devoted entirely to one perhaps small topic, but then in a way that this topic can be treated adequately and exhaustively. If it is just part of a long list of other topics, it won't ever reach that level we want to reach. Now there are two more arguments to be dealt in one blow. This is Maltese topics are too few to render a separate society necessary, and Maltese has already been described exhaustively. So these counter-arguments are based on the general misconception found not only among linguistic laymen that the existence of a grammar and a dictionary is tantamount to an exhaustive description of a given language. You have the first grammar of a language, the first dictionary, and then there's nothing left to do for a linguist or a grammarian or whatever. But that's not true. And even for the evergreens of grammar writing and linguistic studies like English and other languages, major languages, they can't be considered to be known to us in all the necessary details. There are many things about my native language for which there is a tradition of grammar writing of several hundred years. There are so many things we don't know about the language. If you ask a German linguist who devotes his time to the study of German about certain particulars of the German language, he has to think about it, and then he has to conduct a new research project because we still don't know. There are many aspects, even in the core part of grammar, those parts we think have been the problems of which have been settled hundreds of years ago, they're still open questions, and the decisions sometimes depend on what theoretical background or what model you use. But then there are other problems that haven't been settled empirically. We still don't know how Germans use the German language in many respects. And this is true of English, this is true of French, Spanish, Swedish, or what else, and it's of course true for Maltese. We still don't know everything, but we want to know everything. And if this is true, and it is true that we still don't know about large parts of the grammar or the language, let's say the language, then the counter-arguments can be countered. Let me say something pro domo for my own institution. For example, something personal. Why have I started to study Maltese? a linguist who understands Maltese, reads Maltese, and writes Maltese if he is given the time to think about it, but doesn't speak it properly. So why does he invest his time in doing research on Maltese and trying to set up a society devoted to the linguistics of Maltese? This is a funny story. Up until 1996, I thought everything was already exhaustively described because there were so many people who invested their time, blah, 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 in Maltese, because there was this conference in 1996 by the Eurotype research group. Many people came here, and then later the papers were published in the Italian linguistics journal, and I thought, oh, they are all involved in the study of Maltese. Maltese is an interesting language. At that time, I didn't know a word of Maltese. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay, they are doing this. Let's see what comes next. And that nothing came. After this one volume, nothing came. And there were a lot of topics, interesting topics, but nobody pursued this further. So I said, oh, let's have a look. And I started, of course, from this contact linguistic side, because that's probably the most accessible way to get to know Maltese. I saw there were a lot of Italian in Maltese, and then I started to study the influence of Italian on Maltese. But very soon, I recognized that this isn't just the one topic that is interesting in the field of Maltese, but Maltese itself is interesting. Not only the contact influenced by Romance languages, but the structure of Maltese. The language is so attractive for a linguist that it could be studied without this contact issue in the back of our minds. The contact issue is important, of course, but it's not the only issue that's interesting. So in a number of research projects I carried out and still carrying out in Bremen, we have also included Maltese. We have recently published, after 10 years of hard work, a monograph on devoted to commutatives and instrumentals. That's about some semantic relations expressed in English by the preposition with. And a number of languages don't have just one preposition or marker with, but two, like Maltese, ma and bi. You can translate with ma or bi, and there are rules to it. It's not unsystematic or arbitrary, but you can split up the semantic range of the English preposition into two parts and ascribe them to the two Maltese prepositions. So there is a chapter in this book about Maltese. Then I'm currently writing, I've finished a chapter on Maltese, another book on possession splits in the languages of Europe. A number of languages in Europe, contrary to expectation of typologists, distinguish between several types of possession. So you can have things you own, and then you can have different, then there are different relations between somebody having an object and the object itself. Either the relation is temporary, or the relation is stable and permanent. For example, in Maltese, you have the possibility to use the suffixes, possessor suffixes, marti, for my wife, or you use il maratiei. And there are rules to it when you use which one of the two constructions. And there are many more languages in Europe which show a distinction of not exactly of the type you find in Maltese, but a split in the possession system. Although typologists always believe that in Europe you wouldn't find such distinctions. So there is a chapter of 90 pages on the Maltese system in this book. Then there is another book in the making that's devoted to total reduplication. You have a lot of that in Maltese, thousands of sentences we found in the literature, where you have the repetition of words, of full words, like kem, kem, fu, fu, tlita, tlita, sita, sita, height, height, tifel, tifel, and so on, and they have a certain meaning, and you use them very frequently. They are there in the good literature, and they are there in spoken Maltese, and you find them all over the place. And for some time, people have believed that this is impossible for a European language, because European languages are believed not to make use of total reduplication. Then it's like Italian, of course, had total reduplication. Greek has it, and many more languages, and it had turned out that only the far north in Germany, in Europe, is reduplication free, mostly reduplication free. But the south, the extreme west, the east, and the southeast of Europe behave similar to Maltese. So Maltese is a good example of a European language. And then a new project, we have started a project on the grammaticalization of lexical elements in Maltese, and we have started with the so-called incoative, that is a verbal category focusing on the beginning of an action, the start of an event. And you find in Maltese text abundantly used the verb bada, for example, to start something, even where a translation into German or English or French wouldn't make sense with commencer, anfangen, to begin or start. It wouldn't make sense in English to have a focus on start or begin at that in the description of an event, but it is there in Maltese, and I have the feeling that it has to be there. It's not there because of stylistic reasons, but there might be semantic or grammatical reasons why it is there. And there is a competitor for Bäder, you know that, Abad, where it starts something in a certain way. So we have started this, and there are many more projects for the future. Now, let's have a look at the program of the conference. Not all of you know about the program, I guess. And you can see from the program that there are so many very diverse topics to be treated, not only during the conference itself, but there are people working in various places on the globe studying certain aspects of Maltese. And if you add them up, all these aspects, you get a very wide range of topics. So many topics, indeed, that it's really reminiscent of a major philology. It's not just this tiny little bit of two or three topics, little topics, but many more topics, more than I expected, by the way. So this is the first day of the conference. It starts on Wednesday, it starts on Thursday, the 18th of October, 2007. There are two papers devoted to Maltese in the European Union, of course. This is now a highlight, in a way. An Irish colleague opens the conference. Then there is Sandro Caruana with this Maltese in the EU, a case of linguistic Europeanization. The first one is a comparison of Maltese and Irish in the European Union. Then you see there are famous names as well, Bernard Comrie, who was also here during the Eurotype conference, and he will look at the World Atlas of Language Structures and check what features are ascribed to Maltese, in what way Maltese behaves like the rest of the world, in a way, of the languages. Then one of my PhD students, Andreas Allmann, looks at Maltese from a Mediterranean perspective, so that's circum-Mediterranean from Spain to Israel and back to Morocco, look at the language structures there and decide whether or not Maltese behaves like its neighbors in a way. Then there is Dominique Cobet. She will talk about dialectological issues of Maltese, the project of a dialect atlas of Maltese. Alexandra Vella on Maltese prosody. So we are reaching the realm of phonology. Ray Fabri, who is on the program more than once, and his colleagues, again on vowel length and the GH in Maltese. Then we come to lexicon and text. Alexander Borch, the Arabic lexicon at the periphery, lexical stratification in Maltese. Martin Zamit, Maltese and Andalusian Arabic, some lexical notes. A Japanese colleague is there. So then Claire Atsopadi in the evening, that's a more socializing aspect. Your colleague Claire Atsopadi will read parts of her translation of the Harry Potter book, because that's one of our great projects in Bremen, to further the idea that this book, or even the whole series, will be translated into Maltese, because it's translated in other languages with fewer speakers and less money involved. So perhaps there's a possibility to do that as well. Then we have on the second day morphology. A colleague from Algiers will talk about preverbs. Then there is another American colleague on the structure of Maltese loan verbs. My wife is doing her habilitation on gender in language context situations, and she looks at gender of loan words in Maltese. Ray Fabri again, yeah, compounding in Maltese. Mauro Tosco, Italian colleague from Naples, looks at changes in the morphological makeup of Maltese words. Is there a zero morpheme in Maltese? Those of you who are much into linguistics know that the notion of zero is a controversial one in linguistics, and I think it will be very interesting to discuss this. Another Italian colleague from Bergamo has some remarks on the formation of the broken plurals in Maltese. Now the third day, Helen Gregg communicates, there's a psycholinguistics, another major field of linguistics, communication disorders in Maltese children. Then again, two American colleagues, lexical access in Maltese using visual and auditory lexical decision. Then in the afternoon, the foundation ceremony for the society, His Excellency the Ambassador of Malta will be present, and perhaps he will also give a kind of political address to the new society. Then the third day, our French colleague from Paris will talk, give the first talk on syntactic problems. That's the nominal quantifier she in Maltese. I myself will talk about the split VP in literary Maltese. And you know, there are several finite verbs like cont nictep, and you can intercalate a number of elements between the two members of the VP in this kind. Adverbs, sometimes even phrases, clauses, and relatively, you can find the elements of the VP split in two or several parts, and they end up, wind up in positions at a very impressive distance from one another. So this is typical of literary Maltese. Then Albert Borge will talk about topicalization. Elgar Paul Magro, what we can learn from spoken Maltese. And then there is a variety of other topics. I haven't found a suitable label for that section. So Joseph Brinkhardt will talk about some phonological, diachronic phonological developments in Maltese. Antoinette Camilleri Grima about diglossia. Another German colleague will talk about complex predicates in Maltese in a kind of pan-Arabic perspective. Last talk is by Albert Gutt on the semantics of possession. So there we meet as to the topics. And then there is a poster session with quite a few posters about the social linguistics aspects of Californian Maltese. There's a group of immigrants living near San Francisco, and their retention rate of Maltese is tested. Then there is a cognitive pragmatic approach to contemporary Maltese discourse topics by a Taiwanese colleague of ours. Then there is the sentence without verb in Maltese by Fernand de Krier. Francesca Morando will talk about code switching Maltese Sicilian. Stefan Müller, a colleague of mine, presents an HPSG-based model for a description of Maltese. John Patterson from Osnabrück on pseudo-verbs in Maltese, again Ray Fabri. The Maltese resource server, building an electronic lexicon and corpus for Maltese, and then second time myself, news on the Maltese incoative. So you see, this is the full program as is at the moment, and I'm confident that many more people will try to get their names and titles in to the program, but it's full up at the moment. There's no chance to have a fourth day for the conference because my university has to pay for it and funds are limited. But you see, this is not just about one topic. If you look at it more closely, you see the traditional topic, stock taking of ongoing projects, some brainstorming as to fundraising issues, We will install a clearinghouse for the society. Then I want to have the Reinhold Conzi Prize for the best PhD thesis devoted to Maltese linguistics. I don't know whether we will be able to fund the prize. That's one of the issues we can decide only after having the first incoming funds. Then proposals for joint projects. For example, there's the possibility to have a handbook of Maltese or other topics. I already received two project proposals from participants of the conference. Initiatives for the creation of academic positions for Maltese at foreign universities, with the growing need in the EU, as Malta is full member of the EU, there is also a need for an academic backing of Maltese studies in many European states, perhaps Germany. And then support for Il Consil and other relevant activities, among them the translation of Harry Potter and the like. So, this is it. Thank you very much. This time I timed myself and there was no problem.
Jiena, ħanejtkellem mal-ewwel bħala ħanejtek bħala President tal-Kunsill Nazzjonali. Hawnhekk issemma ġiet diskussa jekk hemm xi konflitt bejn ix-xogħol tal-Kunsill u x-xogħol ta' din l-għaqda l-ġdida. Altru li ma nħossux illi hemm, kieku ma konniex ikunu aħna stess il-Kunsill u anke id-Dipartiment tal-Malti li nistiednu il-promotur prinċipali ta' din il-għaqda. Aħna nemmnu kif qed fl-ewwel laqgħa li kellna illi l-Malti għandna nagħmlu dejjem iktar aċċessibbli, aħna nifirħu nieħdu pjaċir illi hawn din l-intrapriża kollha. Aħna bħala pajjiż dejjem infittxu l-investiment barrani. Hawnhekk għandna investiment barrani ta' kapital mid-dera wkoll u anke ta' ħila umana u veru ta' riżorsi umani illi qegħdin jaħdmu qegħdin biex ngħidlek ikunu aġenzija tal-università tagħna, tal-kunsill tagħna. Ma għandniex ikonna barrieri jew firdiet bejnietna assolutament. Aħna iktar nifirħu iktar ma jiġru daw l-affarijiet. Il-lejla ħadna pjaċir naraw dak il-programm kbir tal-ftuħ, ovvero tal-konferenza, u jidher li it-tamiet huma kbar u li jistgħu jitwettqu. X'taqt nagħmel issa ħanejtek ninżel kappell tal-Kunsill u nagħmel żewġ kummenti bħala lingwista u nipprova norbot l-istorja tal-Malti u l-mod kif ħarisna lejh ma' dak li qal il-professur. Qabel xejn il-Malti bħal ħafna lingwi oħra l-ewwel ma beda jiġi studjat kien storikament sewwa mill-lat storiku. U allura il-Malti beda jitqabbel mal-Arbi, mbagħad mad-dialetti tal-Arbi, u allura wieħed ma setax jaħrab illi għal ħafna u ħafna żmien studjajna l-Malti minn dak l-aspett. F'dan is-sens, jena nista' ngħid li jena din il-biċċa xogħol għexta, jena stess jena studjajt bħala arabista l-ewwel, imma mbagħad sibt ruħi dejjem iktar nitbiet minn dak li huwa kanonikament ortodoss f'dak li huwa Arbi, u nitbiet u noħroġ fil-loqsma li dejjem sibtom iktar interessanti fil-fatt id-dottorat eventwalment tiegħi ma kienx fuq l-Arbi, ma kien fuq kif il-kliem barrani integra fl-Arbi. Jiġifieri biex ngħidlek dak li ta' qabli sewwa, u mhux għax jiena kon speċjali ma għaliex jiena iben iż-żmien tiegħi, u veru. Dak li ta' qabli kienu iwarbu bħala affarijiet kurjużi, ibridiżmi u affarijiet hekk. Eżempju, dawk il-forum kollha li huma imnislin minn kliem rumanz sewwa, ma fil-fatt integrati li ħadu l-forum tal-Arbi, per eżempju. Qed nitkellem fuq kull tip ta' taħlit sewwa. Inti kell-eżempju, l-kelma pejjeb, per eżempju, veru, li hija r-riżultat tal-integrazzjoni tal-element rumanz mal-forum semitiċi. Jiġifieri qed ngħid daw l-ibridiżmi li dejjem kienu jiġu skartati minn ta' qabilna biex ngħid hekk, aħna bdejna jsiru l-punt ta' referiment l-attenzjoni tagħna bdiet nintefa' iktar fuqhom. Eventwalment is-sinkronisti imbagħad li naħseb illi li mallem tagħhom mhux qiegħed fostna qiegħed imsiefer kien Albert Borċ fil-każ tal-Malti, illi rawhom anke klassi tal-lingwisti sinkronisti. Dawka għamlu ġid kbir il għaliex irnexxielhom jibdew ħarsu lejn il-lingwa mhux mill-aspett storiku, imma il-lingwa kif inhi. U allura wara s-sinkronisti nistgħu nifhmu ħafna iktar il-fatt li l-Malti inqata u jibda jiġi studjat mhux iktar fil-linja tal-Arabi imma bħala lingwa kif inhu. It-tieni kumment tiegħi mill-art lingwistiku huwa jiena kelli x-xorti li nkun segretarju internazzjonali tal-Aida li kienet li għada. Li waqqafna 12 sanilu jena u kollegi oħrajn li hija l-għaqda li tistudja id-dialetti tal-Arbi fid-dinja. L-għida kienet ix-xorti, il-Malti kien ix-xorti għat jidirli il-għalix nejn minna li waqqafna l-għaqda Martin Van Hoff u jena, insertajna jena Malti u jitħob ħafna l-Malti u studjatu għamlet il-dottorat fih. U allura l-Malti fl-għida kien reprezentat ħafna, anke wis kważi. Meta tqis il-ċokon tal-komunità li titkellmu, ħdej tant dialetti tal-Arbi, però il-fatt kien illi matul il-konferenzi kien dejjem jinħass konferenzi li jsiru kull sentejn u li waħda minnhom saret hawnhekk organizzani hawnhekk, kien jinħass illi il-Malti u dialetti oħrajn tant dbedu, tant huma kif insejħulhom dialetti periferali, illi kien hemm raġuni biex nistudjawhom għalihom weħedhom u mhux iktar bil-fors brabta mal-dialetti l-gbar l-oħra li baqgħu mainstream li baqgħu fil-kurrent prinċipali. Il-Malti dejjem inħass fil-fatt kien ikun biex ngħidlek id-divertiment tal-konferenza fis-sens li joffri aspetti kurjużi, ġodda, interessanti, iserraħ minn ċertu studju intensiv biex ngħidlek, kien jinħass daqsxejn bħala jien nħobb ngħidlu l-iben il-ħali ta' dialetti Arab, il-wieħed li ħarab għalih u ġab ruħu kif derlu. U fil-fatt, naħseb li dan kollu jorbot ħafna mal-mod ġdid kif il-professur qiegħed jissuġġerixxi li l-Malti jiġi studjat. Aħna nerġa' ngħid minn naħa tal-Kunsill u minn naħa tad-dipartiment, aħna ferħalin ħafna li nsibu nies hawnhekk m'għandniex ġemellaġġ, dal-aħħar li nkollu nitkellmu fuq ġemellaġġ, hawn għandna adozzjoni. Qed jadottaw il-Malti bħala l-sien li jiġi studjat. Għandna nkunu x-xorti għandna nkunu ferħanin ħafna ila għaliex nitkellem issa mill-għatta minn qed jaħdem hawnhekk. Aħna n-numru tagħna huwa żgħir ħafna, n-numru tagħna minħabba n-nies li marru jaħdmu fl-Unjoni Ewropea naqas drastikament u din inħossuha illi l-Unjoni Ewropea minn dalla titlob ħafna minna imma fl-istess ħin toħdilna n-nies, toħdilna n-nies li jkunu trenjati hawnhekk. Aħna nieħdu pjaċir li qegħdin jaħdmu hemm imma ma nistgħux ma nħossux in-nuqqas tagħhom. U allura support bħal dan mill-lat lingwistiku tant serju u tant impenjat ma jistax ma jtinix pjaċir. Grazzi.
Grazzi.
Campus FM għadu kem waslilkom it-tieni taħdita minn serje ta' taħdidiet organizzati mid-Dipartiment tal-Malti fl-Università fl-imkien mal-Kunsill Nazzjonali tal-Lisim Malti.